not to throw a monkey wrench in this, but two things. If it's specific to Virginia Beach and you say residential, it's much simpler because it's pretty clear where is it residential property is zoned residential, period. Or it's not. Mm-hmm. Commercial, mm-hmm. this wouldn't apply. State park, I guess it wouldn't apply. But John's right. We trust me, this has come up before. And my question, it came up about notification. And do you notify, you know, in residential areas? Do you notify in rural areas? Because the word residential was used before when they were talking about this bill. And there's lots of land in Virginia that's agricultural, which you have a by right, you could build a house on it. Mm-hmm. So is it residential or is it not? You know, Virginia Beach is not so much like that, but that's, you know, that's...
Well, we're only talking about the Lynn Haven here.
Right. So, again, I think it's simpler in the Lynn Haven. You know, if you want to go with residential, we can work with the city of Virginia Beach and get a map. Shows us where all the residential zoned property is. It goes up to this point and stops, and from there on it's not, and it would be a different rule if we were to pass some kind of regulation that said we buffered. The other thing is cages. You were talking about cages. The aquaculture regulation says structures. Structures means, in the regulation, cages, trays, bags, nets. So we could define all of those.
No, we'll go structure.
Yeah, we'll go structure.
Yes, sir.
Everybody okay with structures?
Yes.
That's not going to interfere with oyster gardenings, bat catchers, those kinds of things,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, that's
well,
that's
well. Hold on. Let's not get too far down that road, I hope. You can get an oyster gardening permit. I talked a little bit about this when I did the briefing at the first meeting. That is a permit. You have to get a permit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think this would affect that. This regulation is about cages. We have a regulation about cages already. We, I assume, modify that one, not create a new regulation. So you can still get an oyster gardening permit. I don't see how that would necessarily affect that.
Okay.
Unless you don't want people to oyster garden either at their piers. You know, then we'd have to get rid of that regulation completely. And I got to tell you, that would really cause a ruckus. But I don't think that would affect that.
I mean, that's already a clear permitting process. So it shouldn't be. I don't see where that would be an issue.
There's no notification required.
Kind of, and I guess we're still kind of. I guess if you were talking about zone resident, you know, in my mind, it's where their homes are. You know, and I don't care what it's zoned as. You know, it's if their home's there. If they're not homes there, then, you know, okay. And if a home gets built there, then move the cages back a little bit.
Right. But like I said, in Virginia Beach, I don't know it's a big deal because where there are homes in Virginia
there
Beach,
homes,
it's residential.
Yeah.
I don't think there's too many homes that are out of compliance.
Not a lot of agricultural zone land on the Lynn Haven River anymore.
No, there used to be, but...
Yeah.
Pretty much all that land
that's a residence
turned into houses now.
So Ben, it would a condo project
be a residential project?
Yes, that's residential.
It would. The land would be zoned residential, I'm sure, for a condominium project.
Yeah. It's residential. Yeah, it would be an R.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know, there's all kinds of businesses like a old folks home or something like that can be built that have other types. But the spirit of this thing is residential.
All right. Does anyone have a heartburn with 150 feet?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I just have one way to maybe make this a little bit simpler when you were dealing with the residential versus I'm Chip Nyker, been here a long time. But I don't know that you even need to go down the road of residential. You could stick it still in the Lynn Haven system, or if you wanted to, and it might be something we might steal and use other places, but. If you just made the regulation such that you had to notify the adjacent property owner that was within a certain distance, and you were talking 150, 200 feet, something like that, and if they objected to it, you couldn't place it within that boundary. If they didn't have a problem with it, they'd still be able to go up to low water or wherever or wherever on the shoreline there. It would just make the regulation only apply, excuse me, if... you know, it would still provide that buffer. You didn't have to worry about whether it's residential or not. And within that 200 feet, if somebody did want to put it there, they'd have to notify.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. So that takes care of things like the park, because the park's not going to object. So.
Well, I just think that it would be simpler for everybody in the Lynn Haven to understand that if they had this 150-foot buffer, they wouldn't have to think about it or complain or be notified. And it'd just be a very simple thing and eliminate a lot of problems. What do you think?
I agree with you, Hap. The only thing I would say, go with the 210 rather than, because that's what it is now for riparian rights, and just stay with that even same number instead of a little of this, a little of that. And is that such a bad
You're
thing?
You're kind of stuck. I went from 100 to 150.
Hey, may I interject just for a minute? There's another nuance to this concept here. So if there's a buffer where there's no cages allowed, period, within 150 feet of mean low water, which I think is where you're all at, you do know that that would include riparian leaseholders. They would be prohibited from setting cages in their riparian areas.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you want?
Yes.
Now, I see Millie having the second thought.
Yeah. No, the only reason I say that is because I have neighbors, and I don't exactly know where they are or what exactly, you know, when I went, you know, around, they do. I have neighbors who have their own cages, and they're doing their thing, and they're growing oysters in various methods. I guess I'll have to knock on doors and find out.
Well, I guess that goes then to Chip's comment about notification.
So,
I mean, I guess if they were doing their own thing, then they would be continued to allow to do so.
They are doing their own thing. In Little Neck Creek, they are growing oysters. I just don't know how many, how much. I haven't done a study on it or anything, but I'm happy they're doing it.
So,
I don't know what they have, but they're happy doing it. We're happy to have them do it, you know.
Could they, this is because a riparian lease and a general lease actually had the same rules. So a riparian lease, currently, he can put cages down without a permit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same scenario. Could they go through the permit process then, just like you do for a gardening or whatever?
If we establish a permit process, that's another path forward that could...
If the riparian, you know, in that zone, whatever.
This does raise the question, and Ken's about to say it, I think, would this 150-foot setback area preclude the need for a separate caged leasing system?
Well, that would be discussed. And I guess I would make a comment about this 150-foot setback in residential areas, however you want to say that. I think that would be a nice buffer. But I think that buffer should be allowed to be encroached upon if the property owner says fine. Because we're protecting the property owner. And so if the property owner wants to put cages there, he can put cages there. If the daggone leaseholder, the regular leaseholder, he may own that property himself. He's not going to object to cages up next to his land. So anyway, that's yes, John.
Bill made the comment that this applies to leaseholders, not to homeowners.
But there are a lot of homeowners that have riparian leases. That's their buffer, and they can say...
We're talking about the oyster leaseholders.
And they may be homeowners, too.
The VMRC has granted them a lease property.
And some of them are the adjacent homeowner.
Which doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
There's two separate leases.
We're talking about the commercial oyster leases that you guys are passing out.
Okay, let me see if I can clarify this. Okay, so if you want to create a buffer, okay, whatever the distance is, let's just say you created one, and the rule is no cages, period. There's no notification. You just can't put cages in that area, structures, okay?
For leaseholders.
Right. You have to have a lease to start with in order to put a cage on it without a permit. Otherwise, you got to have a permit of some kind. So there's a lease right up to your property already. We change the regulation, and now there's a buffer. So within the first 150 feet of his lease, from the shoreline out, he can't put a cage, okay? That would apply to any kind of leaseholder, even a riparian leaseholder who could use his lease commercially. He wouldn't be able to use the first 150 feet if his lease went to 210. He could use the rest of it because it would apply to him just like anybody else.
If there's a notification process that says to put leased cage structures within some distance from the shoreline in a lease, you have to notify the adjacent landowners. And like Chip said, if they object, then it's an automatic no. If they don't, then the leaseholder can still put them there, including the riparian landowner who wouldn't object to his own cages in his 150-foot buffer. But it would take that kind of language. If you just ban cages for 150 feet from shore, then no one who has a lease could put them there unless you specifically put in the regulation that riparian landowners could still use that buffer, but commercial leaseholders couldn't.
I think the notification process makes the most sense because it provides the flexibility to not interfere with someone's ability to use that area if they choose to and they are the adjacent property owner, but it gives the adjacent property owner who doesn't want it there the ability to object. So it seems to accomplish both things, in my opinion, and it eliminates the problem of your having to decide where this applies and where it doesn't apply, like in the case of the areas off the state park or other areas that are not residential. You're not having to sort all that out.
The only problem with that scenario is when you have a change of ownership of the upland, and the new owner says no way, and then it's then you know what is the scenario? How do you deal with that issue?
The cages have to be moved out to the buffer.
Does he have to wait until the lease period is over?
No. The new landowner would whoever had the cages there would have to move them out to the 150 feet.
I think that's a slippery slope there. And whether
legally,
whether we can write a regulation that would be effective to do that. But I will say that, you know, if you buy a piece of property and the neighbor next door has got a junk car in his yard, it's there when you bought the property. If you buy a lot and there's cages out in the water behind your lot, you know, you bought a house that has cages in your backyard.
That's one way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I understand. I'm not trying to be flip, but but I think it's a little bit questionable then whether we can.
We're putting
apply rules to someone who followed them, and then a new person comes in, moves in, and says, "Well, I don't like it."
So Ben, actually, I would do the counter of that. It would be as I want to sell, and I want you to move now, so I have a better opportunity to sell. So I mean, you can see both ways. Yeah.
We're trying to provide a buffer.
Yeah, I understand.
And to eliminate as much as possible conflict with the landowner. We're not going to eliminate all of them. And to be arguing over the 1% or 2% that's not covered and let the 98% get away doesn't make good sense. Let's take care of the 98% and he can worry about it later.
Ben, I think you are right on what you said.
Are we okay with this? It doesn't preclude us talking about other things, but we're okay with this.
I think you got it nailed.
With the notification process.
We're good. And this is for the Lynnhaven River.
Yes,
it's for Lynnhaven River, but I can see us applying this to other highly residential areas if we have other conflicts like this in the future. Listen, you guys are setting a precedence, a groundwork, something that hadn't been done before.
Framework.
Instead of having to go through all this the next time this happens and wherever, we've already had this experience. So all this discussion is good. But y'all agree on everything or not?
I have a question about.
You go ahead.
You can go.
I have a question. If I own a piece of property on Lynnhaven, and I bought it, and I have riparian rights, okay? And we make a change in those riparian rights, which is what we're talking about. Is that a taking? And what's the effect of the taking?
So what the code gives you with a riparian right is the right to propagate shellfish. That's all you get, just like a leaseholder. We have a regulation that allows you to put cages, but that's not in the code.
My opinion, and I'm not a lawyer, and I'll probably get in trouble because I'm saying this, I'm practicing law without a license, but I don't think it's a taking because we didn't allow cages on leases before. We passed the regulation that allows it. It's an extra right we've kind of given you, but the code is really what controls a lease and a riparian. So you can still grow orchards on your riparian. No one's going to stop you. You just have to drill them the traditional way. You can't put a structure within so many feet.
But since he owns the land,
that answers my question.
He can give himself permission, but he probably won't because he's argumentative.
Sure.
Well, he didn't hear you.
In our neighborhood, a lot of us don't even like ourselves. Sometimes we work at cross purposes. The riparian rights that I got with the property that I bought is only for shellfish.
No.
I didn't think so.
So you have general riparian rights, which include the right to peer out, the enjoyment of that area, the right to dredge out to navigable water. A riparian orchard lease is a completely separate thing in the code. That's a specific just to giving you the right to grow oysters within that general riparian area that you have general rights in. And, of course, then we specify. This is the area we're going to give you, half acre. You might own much more property than a half acre on the one. But you just get that one area to grow shellfish, and that's all that's for. It has no real bearing on your general riparian rights, but you have general riparian rights if you own land. If you only own 5 feet along the shore, you have riparian rights. Can't get an oyster riparian, but because you don't have the 205.
My question was, how does this apply to someone who already has cages on a lease that's within 150 feet?
Ooh.
What if he doesn't have a place to move?
Well, no, we haven't done the regulation yet, so I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I have a suggestion. Don't mess with them. That they get to keep what they got until they renew their lease, and then it goes to the new.
Then they have to go through the notification process at the renewal.
Now we're back to use plan again.
That's back to use plan, yeah.
No, you don't want to take anything away from a washerman that's already got a cage. We don't want to do that. We just don't want a proliferation up against people's property.
I'm not even talking about watermen. She's talking about residents.
No, I was talking about a waterman who has cages now in an area that would be within 150 feet of a
And they made a lease with the state, and the agreement was they could put cages there when they made the lease. So any big-time changes we make are going to, a lot of them are going to have to come up at the renewal date when the state can change the lease.
And then I guess my second question is, does this notification have to, is it a one-time thing, or is it every time the lease is renewed?
I couldn't begin to answer.
Leases that are renewed are still a same, they're not a new lease.
It's
they're
right.
Just renewed.
Yeah, so
and there are no stipulations on the lease.
Again?
No. Because we have no real use plan. If you meet the 10-year criteria, which is pretty easy to do with the loopholes, then we renew the lease.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no conditions. We don't put any. Now, if the law were changed about the 10-year renewal and it was a use plan incorporated into that, then it could be written in a way that says every 5 years or every 10 years you produce a use plan, you have to adhere to it, and that's what you're judged on. And if you don't, you lose the lease, or you change your use plan in the middle, and we judge, you know. But yeah, I don't think that would really have any effect on renewing leases.
Okay.
And,
going to clarify
you know, as
that.
Far as existing, I think we've touched on that already, that that's a slippery slope if you try to write a regulation that's going to take away somebody who should, and I'm not promoting this, should be grandfathered because he followed the rules.
And has a contract.
And then all
the
of
state.
A sudden now you
right.
pulled the rug out from under.
Yeah. Right.
Let me back up a second for, I believe it's something either Kim or Mike asked and Ken had said, and I agree. These are issues aimed at the Lynn Haven River and the problems that are there now. And as I've said, I view this area to be unique, a uniquely problem child at this point here with the many issues that we're dealing with. Could this be, and I think the word you were looking for, a template?
Yeah.
Could this be a template for other areas? I think it could be. But I want you guys to know, and all you guys to know, is that I have no intention of supporting this being used in other areas. The problems we see in Virginia Beach are not unique, but they're uniquely concentrated in Virginia Beach. Doesn't mean it could not be a problem in other areas at some point. I just don't know any other areas that's reached this degree of saturation with these particular issues. So could this be used in other ways, other areas someday? Yes. My intention is not. But then again, I'm just one vote of nine on the commission. I believe the seafood industry is represented and the shellfish industry is represented on the commission.
And I appreciate that, John. And I completely agree. And what I really think that we need to be discussing, because I think it would take care of a lot of these issues, is a use plan.
And I agree. It'll help VMRC a lot. They handle a lot of these things. This John.
We have that input.
John.
Exactly.
I just wanted a summary of what you're discussing right now.
All right. That's kind of where we were going. This last bit, we were just talking about existing cages. This setback and notification and all this kind of thing applying to new cages. Okay, is that where we're at? Hap, is that where we're at? New cages?
New cages.
Okay. Millie, that's okay?
Yes.
Richard? Yeah. Bill? Okay. And John?
No. No. All
right, John wants to move them off.
I personally think that a lot of the existing cages came in with little or no notification of the neighbors. And they came in under what I consider to be a little bit of a questionable 12-inch rule. And I think that these things are probably the single biggest issue that most of the homeowners that are, you know, considering lawsuits and who are stomping around mad, and, you know, I think that some of the existing cages need to be addressed. That's my personal opinion. If we sit here and grandfather them and say, okay, you can leave them there, there are going to be a lot of homeowners that are still very upset.
Who's going to pay for the moving of them?
Okay. Right. I'm in agreement with this.
Applying to new cages.
To new cages, right. Yes.
I would agree with new cages and add that respectfully that the existing cages were there under the rules, is a contract with the state, and I think they should be grandfathered.
Okay, Mike?
Ditto.
All right, the other John?
Well, I have to agree with my other John. So I respectfully think that you should have some time for them to be moved. I think in the past they've used like a year or something like that for that seems reasonable that, you know, within a year. I mean, these, you're almost at market at, what, 18 months now? So, I mean, I think a year is a reasonable time to transition.
I think you have to understand that for some individuals, they may not have a place to move them. That may not be an option.
This is their livelihood, and
that's true, but this is people's homes that they've invested in and everything else. So there's two flips. There's two flips to this. So.
All right.
Two sides of that.
Now, as far as the summation kind of thing, are you ready for a summation for us, Ben, of what we said?
I do have, so before we get to that, this question we had about existing and new ones, we have no idea how many are there. We don't want a situation where there's suddenly, like we have land grabs or something, where people say, oh, they're not going to let me put any new cages. I better run out this week and plant them all everywhere. So I'm just wondering, what method, what system are we going to put in place, or do we have in place, so that this doesn't happen? Whenever you talk about existing, is existing as of now, or existing what will be in 2-3 months when everybody throws them out all over the place? You know, how do we monitor it and control it so we know what is existing and what is not.
Well, typically, if we're going to modify a regulation and add some of this kind of language to it, it would probably be the aquaculture regulation that allows cages. You know, it's going to have an effective date. And in essence, everyone's going to be grandfathered unless you put some rule in there that's going to allow retroactive landowners to object after the fact, which I think we've heard of. Varied opinions about that, but I think that's also legally going to be tough for us to write a regulation to do that. It would take whenever the regulation is changed and goes into effect, that would be however many cages there are right then. Mm-hmm. And of course, that would take some work for us to try to make sure we understood what that was.
All right.
On that date.
Go ahead and sum up what we came up with. Repeat what we did.
Well, what I think I heard, well, there was a lot of stuff about setbacks, but I think the final thing you were trying to settle on was a buffer to change the regulation to create some type of buffer from mean low water. And was there a consensus distance?
150 feet. Most said okay.
From mean low water, and within that area, if someone wanted to place new cages, whenever after the regulation took effect, it would require a notification process to the adjacent landowners that were immediately adjacent. If structures were being proposed on an existing lease, and if the adjoining property owner objects, then it would just basically be an automatic no from the commission. There would be no permitting process. It would just be no. I think that's what I heard. If they didn't object, then the cages could still be allowed. And there was some more discussion about the existing cages being removed if a new landowner objects, but I don't
know. That's a contentious issue. Right. So the other stuff we agreed on. All right. Was that clear enough?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, as far as just on this particular point, I guess I need John. That John. This John. All right. Just our coming out of this group to the commission, we've mostly agreed on in the residential areas a setback of 150 feet from mean low water of new cages, unless the property owner says okay. Right, that's the basic of it. We're not in total agreement of the existing cages. The most have said that the existing cages stay where they are. Some feel that there should be some provision that the landowner can request those cages to be moved out to the buffer at some future date. Not immediately, but some future date. Is that good enough to the commission? Because I don't think we're going to come to agreement on that.
That's good enough to put before the commission.
Okay.
It's good enough to send out for the usual public notification, public hearing, commission, public hearing, and some sort of decision. There are fairness issues involved here, and I'm not, like Ben, an attorney, but I go with the simple premise that if you're fair, you probably win in court.
In this case, I can make an argument of fairness on both sides.
Exactly.
I could argue both sides of that, to move them back and to leave the ones that are already there. So anyway, I do not think we're going to come to a yes.
Question. Do you all ever do a regulation and go backwards? You know, like today's date, any cages in the water as of today's date, when you all do the regulation down the road in 2-4 or 5 months?
Yes, it would be effective.
Then?
It would be effective when the commission approves it.
Yes. So they couldn't go backwards. They couldn't backtrack.
Sticky wicket,
okay.
That really is a sticky wicket because you're kind of being retroactive.
Okay.
And I understand Millie's concern. Suddenly, we open a floodgate here for cages. That's the joy of participatory democracy here. And, you got a public notice requirement here in order to have a public hearing before regulation can be added or amended. And speaking of good government and open government here, I think that before we move further on all this, I think there's probably some members of the public that would like to weigh in on this issue.
Well, can I ask a quick question, if you don't mind? Because this is just for clarification for myself. Will there be one report that goes to the commission from this committee? And if so, will it be like maybe the majority report and the minority report? How will this work group report to the commission?
Yes.
it's a perfectly good answer, and I think I tap danced with Ben. My gut thinking is this: is that a majority of the 13 members on this panel would constitute a recommendation, and I think that the votes for these recommendations for each provision are necessary. And I think that it is entirely reasonable to offer those people who are not in the majority on a particular issue or in all these issues, or if they want to write a minority report, we'll certainly help them to format this and to help them, you know, put it together just, you know, so that it's standard format. If that is what, you know, you all want to do, if you end up on a point of this that you disagree on. And I suspect that there will be points that there will be at least some degree of disagreement. So I think it's fair to be able to present the commission both what the majority of the work group has recommended and to let those voices who were not in the majority be heard. And I envision this report going to the General Assembly or key members of the General Assembly as well. So, I mean, unless anybody here thinks that they see a better way. I mean, I want to make sure that everybody's voice is heard, and that's why you all are here, because you all have distinct and different voices and different perspectives. So, out of all this, we forge a path forward. We might not all agree with it, but we may agree with most of it.
Again, I've made this comment before. A straight vote that is split along sector lines is mostly meaningless to me. I think this whole work group is to really try to come to some type of points of agreement, and there will be points that we do not agree. I mean, that's just going to happen, and those points just need to be expressed to the commission that we mostly agreed on this, we did not agree on this, and these are what, you know, so all that needs to be said. And how is this going to be a formal report? I hope not. If it is, Ben needs to write it.
I already made that decision. Yes.
Good, thank you, because I could see that coming to me. I don't want to do it. All right, you had a comment you wanted to make?
Perhaps. And the other guy, folks, I mean, you keep saying, who's going to pay to move the old cages?
Yeah.
I know those upland property owners that are all excited about this would happily pay to move those things.
Okay.
I mean, you know, you don't think Bob Dardeen would pay to move those cages off that point?
He'd pay
you double to move them off.
The cages are going to fall apart after.
You think we've had enough for tonight?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Let me clarify one thing. The question about retroactive, I think I can answer that even more succinctly. Last March, the commission looked at a regulation to no longer accept applications in polluted waters, which we always had in the past. And that question came up during that hearing. Could we make it retroactive? Or what about all the ones that were pending? Because we had a lot of applications that were pending that were in polluted water. And our Attorney General rep opined, and I agreed with him, I think that was my opinion too, that you couldn't go backwards and tell someone who followed all the rules to apply for ground, they didn't have the right to continue with their application. What we did do and what the commission voted was for me to bring every one of those to the commission on a case-by-case basis. And so far, they denied every one of them. But the person gets their chance to come to the commission, make their argument of why they should be able to grow orchards in a polluted area when the policies no longer accept those. So the regulation was not made retroactive. We are, you know, and I think that would be a danger of trying to do that with this one, is that, you know, when everybody played by the rules, and then you kind of jerk the carpet out from under them.
Right. Just one quick question. Have we heard anything back about the liability questions that I sent to Matt?
Well, it's been sent.
Yeah.
No, we have not yet. Matt Hull is the Attorney General's rep for the commission. He's very good, but he's very, very busy. Very, very busy. And he's been in court like 3 days this week and preparing for cases that are coming next week as well.
We weren't close to get to that anyway, but we want to get to it eventually.
He told me that he expected to, by the next meeting. My hope is that by the next meeting he'll be coming forward with some of the liability issues.
Good, because I think that's, he's not going to be here till the third meeting, July 1st. That's kind of his issue. But anyway, that's good. All right, we really are going to need to discuss this use plan, which I think may take care of a lot of the other issues and a lot of concerns once we, that.
Can we get an example of that? I mean, most of us are not in this business. Maybe Mike or somebody from the commission can.
Do you want to describe what we're looking for in a use plan?
Maybe you've got the best handle on that. You know what we require now, unless you can pass it off.
Jim and I both talked about this a lot. Jim might be as good a person to talk about it as I
do. When you're talking about a use plan, it means that when you apply for a piece of ground, that you have a plan that fits what the ground looks like. If you apply for 250 acres of ground and you say you're going to do natural, growing naturally by putting shell and seed, well, that plan won't fly because there's not enough shells in Virginia to do that big of a plan. So, I mean, we have a lot of people now coming in and taking up 250 acres, and the thought is that they're just going to take whatever's on it and they're done with it. But we would like to see a plan where you actually had a plan for what you wanted to do, and if you didn't follow through your plan, you wouldn't be able to go catch those oysters until you'd followed through with the plan. And it would be the same for cages. If you had planned to do cages, we'd know how big a lease a big operation takes. And so if you apply for 100 acres to do cages, and we don't ever see any area that's bigger than 10, that we know that, you know, you didn't need to apply for that much. And, you know, we want to see how you plan on laying that area out. If you're truly planning on doing 100 acres, you have to have facilities beyond what we've ever seen before in Chesapeake Bay. So it's not a complicated thing, and most of these use plans can be done for people instantly, but it brings the thoughts of what a lease should be into the real world. Is basically what we're looking for is a plan that makes it legitimate and taking up an area. And just, since we've, if I can say a little bit about aquaculture in the Lynn Haven, I think we're worrying about, and you need to keep this in your mind when you're talking about it. The Lynn Haven is a different area for doing aquaculture from what we see in most places where aquaculture is growing. In order for you to do a big operation, you have to have a land facility. And there is no land facility available on Lynn Haven. So you're not going to see, when somebody starts talking about doubling and tripling and half the areas, that'll never happen in Lynn Haven. Mm-hmm. First, the bottom is not good for no more than probably 20% of Lynn Haven to start with. And mostly what's going to be, another thing about Lynn Haven is in the rural areas, aquaculture is a good job. In a city, aquaculture is a low-paying job. There's nobody making oodles of money out of aquaculture. It's a living, but it's not a windfall. So I think we are pretty much maxed out in Lynn Haven. I think you're going to see areas come and go, but I don't think you're going to see the footprint get a whole lot bigger than it is right now because it is such hard work. The only thing you got going for you in Lynn Haven is that it allows cottage-type growers, and that's what we see there because they have a direct access directly to restaurants where they get the top dollar with a small effort and a small footprint. And so I think that's what you're going to continue to see in Lynn Haven. You're not going to see a massive big company come in Lynn Haven and take over a big part of the area. So I think you need to be have that in the back of your mind, is just what is the dynamics there. And just like Hap says, he doesn't want to work on a Saturday or Sunday because there's so many people around. And it's going to be the same for anybody that wanted to be big. They need to work 7 days a week, and they're not going to want to be out there on weekends. They don't want the possibility of danger to their stuff. So and I think you don't want to try to be solving a problem that probably will never happen. And I think that's some of the thoughts that you've been talking about. It will never happen.
Will you revisit your comment about 20% of the Lynn Haven bottom is not
suitable for cages?
How is that determined? And who is
by the softness of the bottom. Okay. There's such a small percentage out there that the bottom is not too soft.
So, in effect, we're leasing bottom.
That has, will never be used. No, that's right. But we don't have lease plans to stop that. So, I mean, you can... You say the footprint you want, but that's not, you know, if you got a 20-acre piece and you have 1 or 2 acres on it that's good, that's probably about normal.
So that's part of what we're talking about, the use plan, and developing something that you have to use the land for what you
specified it for.
Right, and so that would stop plopping cages with no notification. It could be. You could make it that way. You could board it that way.
Has that bottom land that's not suitable for cages, has that been delineated in any way? Has that been mapped? Do we know?
The leaseholders know where it is because they don't have cages there. I mean, that's why they don't have cages there, and that's why it would be so expensive to try to do a system on a bottom that you got to use some gear that we don't have readily available to us, that nobody's going to attempt that. And you're certainly not going to attempt that. And the unintended consequences of say, that buffer and putting those buoys and moving to deeper water is that...
reduces that.
That actually you're going to force them out in an area where there's a buoy. You don't have to have a buoy now, but you're going to have a bunch of buoys in deeper water where you can navigate better. And you can still fall them, but you're not going to have that sort of system working in Lynn Haven because there's no land where they can take those cages back and work on them in from those deep areas to somewhere on land where we see that in other parts of the state, but you don't see it. You're not going to see that in Lynn Haven.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right, the commissioners told me to wrap things up, but that's where we're. Hopefully we'll take up next time in a couple weeks. But I'm going to take some public comments. So I got
one thing for you first.
Yes.
Could you somehow or other surmise to us or send us out a notice to tell us what we're going to talk about next time? We kind of rambled around a little bit tonight.
We tend to do that.
But do we want to say we're going to talk more about cages, or more we're going to talk more about this and the other, or maybe is that something you could send to us later?
Yeah, but I think we're going to talk about this use plan will be our starting point. Come up with some plan that we can all be comfortable.
Because I want everybody to kind of focus and be thinking. You know, you're driving home tonight.
And the thing is that the people in the industry that have worked with VMRC, they are more in tune with this, because there's been talk about this for a while of doing something to better manage the whole lease process. And so, me included, we're just kind of learning about this kind of thing. So that's where we'll start. All right. Well, y'all been sitting out there, and you've actually been very polite, and so we'll give you a chance to come up and speak if you have something you want to address this little committee tonight, and then we'll be meeting again here in 2 weeks, same time, same place. I think it's June 16th.
That's right.
Thursday. All right, Chris, anyone else have something you want to tell us? All right. Chris's mama.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share some information with you. My name is Beverly Ludford, and I have a lease on the Lynn Haven and have since 2010. And I just want to share a few little bits of, I hope, information that will help to, I guess, tell you what it's really like. First of all, I want to let you know that...
Excuse me a second.
Yes.
Can we close that laptop? or is that permanent? Or is that permanent or something?
It's a hard screen.
Well, I thought it was a laptop, but it's just a screen.
Can you see me?
There you go.
Well, yeah, but then they won't be able to see you.
Yeah.
As low as I can go.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought it was a laptop. Yeah,
I'd never seen it down, so I'd...
Well, you know, it's a good thing that you mention that because when we move out farther from, you know, where I can stand and work, which I'm 5 foot tall, I'm going to have to get scuba gear. You can't see me behind this computer, and I can't work my oyster cages in more than 5 foot of water. Anybody could look at me and tell that. So you need to think about, I mean, I really work on the farm, and I tend the babies, and I take care of the cages, and we do a couple of things that you might not know about, and that's cage rotation. It's our job to keep those cages clean and so that the water can filter through and feed those oysters so that they can grow and do what they're supposed to do, filter the water and so forth. So I just wanted to remind people that, you know, when you talk about some things here that might push us out further into the river, not only are you causing more buoys or markers or whatever you want to call it, but it makes it a real challenge for people who've been trying to do this, you know, that are, I guess you would say, challenged by the height situation here. The other thing is we don't do anything mechanical. We do it all by hand. So, you know, we don't have any kind of equipment. You know, you're looking at the equipment right here. So that's another issue that you need to know. And I think that's true for way more than half of the oyster farmers on the Lynn Haven. There was a comment made that I have to repeat, and I want to make sure that you think about it. You know, I was real quiet when you talked, so I hope you hear this. Somebody said, if we dirty it up, will this alleviate these problems? And the answer to that is, you know, yeah. You know, if you want to go back to the way it was when I couldn't let my son swim in it because it was so filthy and it smelled, you know, we can do that, but that's not what the oysters want to do, and that's not certainly what the oyster watermen want to do. Growing oysters is what we want to do so that we can improve the environment and the economy and give an opportunity for people to work on the water like they have for generations so that that particular occupation won't go away. It makes me sad, very sad, to think that people who own homes on the Lynn Haven don't have any respect for the watermen who made it possible for Virginia Beach to become what it is today. They were the beginning. They were the first employees of the Lynn Haven, the first employers of the Lynn Haven. So there's a lot of history there. And you can tell I'm emotional about it because we're talking about Chris's great-great-grandfather or his father who can't do it anymore because he's disabled. And the way that we use the water to make a difference in our family for our children, and we want that for our grandchildren. And finally, I think it's really important, turn the page here on myself so I can remember when I wrote down. I'm kind of shaky about this. You talk about, you know, cages and so forth and all. You know, we have homeowners on the Lynn Haven that allow us to use their riparian rights for nurseries. We put cages and we start babies and we work with them, and, you know, we can go door to door and ask people if we, and we have done that. You know, would you like for us to, you know, start some of our oysters off, you know, off of your dock? And they have said yes. You know, there's nothing wrong with growing oysters, and a lot of homeowners like it. The cage that the homeowner puts doesn't look any different than the cage that we put. You know, it's not worth any more. It's not any more valuable. It doesn't make the property worth any less. You need to understand that our cages are not nasty and your cage is beautiful. They're the same cages. And that's what this country was built on, is not for people to look down their noses at people who work. And I think the cage rotation is another thing. We move our cages so that we can clean them. We have a commitment through the Farm Bureau to cage rotation. And Dr. Wesson, who I respect more than I can ever tell you, has taught us about good practices. Good practices. Things that will keep the Lynn Haven clean, things that will keep the oysters clean, and that they won't die, taking care of them. And we've had to spend a lot of time educating other watermen on the practices that he's taught us. So we're scientists. You know, we're not low-life. You know, and I think that many times when people say, we don't want you, we don't want to see you, we don't like you, you know, people have told us that. And you need to know that this is about my family.
and my grandchildren and my son. You know, that's enough for me.
Thank you, Mrs. Lefford.
You know, you need to know that a lot of what you're talking about, there's practicality to it. There's day-to-day issues, and I can't work my cages in 6 foot of water. I'm sorry.
Okay. Anyone else, Chris? You're standing up. Come on up here.
What is cage rotation?
I need to take them and clean them and stuff like that.
Give me a definition. Get me a definition.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Chris, before you start your spiel.
Yes, he'd be good to tell me.
Yes, Chris. Well, actually, no, he wants to know what a definition of cage rotation is.
Okay, cage rotation. Instead of pressure washing or taking pressure washing gear out or bringing them back to the dock and pressure washing, we rotate the gear, either leave it on the boat or leave it on site and let it dry out or expose more, say, in shallower water, and so the critters eat it clean and it falls off and we're not concentrating effluent in the water. So instead of, like I say, pressure washing the gear, we leave some gear empty for 2 or 3 days, maybe a week, and then we rotate it back in the lineup. And that way we're not bringing gasoline, bringing oil. And I'm not saying that's bad. I mean, there's other people in the industry that do that. And in other areas, and I don't want to, you know, I'm just saying for us, you know, that's worked best for us. Our customers, our clientele like that concept, that green concept, and there are reward systems with the USDA. We're recognized as agriculture. We've been rewarded for doing that monetarily through grants, through taxpayer dollars.
So. Thank you, Chris.
All right. First thing, and we've been through a lot together, Mr. Welton, that's for sure. So I got to address your comments first about the recreational boater homeowner representation. Got to remember, we got to look back. Whit Sessoms, builder. Wayne McCleskey, builder. Largest taxpayer in the city of Virginia Beach. Both Virginia Beach residents, both served on the VMRC as commissioners. We're not groundbreaking here, okay? We've had lawyers, numerous attorneys from Tidewater, Portsmouth, Virginia Beach. Please, please, audience, and please, commission, and please, y'all, remember, this is not the first, you know, this is not the first chance that we've had. Dr. Ken Neal has been an unbelievable recreational proponent. I mean, we have been, the landscape of the VMRC Commission has been well-stocked with recreational representation, okay? So, also a retired Virginia Beach police officer who served us very well, and we lost to cancer, unfortunately, Joe Palmer. He was commercial, but he often went against the commercial on decisions that involved safety and aquaculture and crabbing. The Army Corps of Engineer has relinquished its permitting of piers, bulkheads, etc., to the VMRC. They've entrusted the VMRC to streamline a lot of those applications where 20 years ago, 30 years ago, they had to go through the Corps to get a lot of that. So the VMRC has been entrusted with a lot of recreational decision-making, especially piers and additions and home additions and things of that nature. So that's one to make sure I got a counter to that on that. You know, the comment about signings and usage, I want to fall back on and say that there are places where boating is just not safe. Most of the time, especially in the Lynn Haven, these are the places we do aquaculture. And while I'm there, I want to touch on the depth thing. It sounds good, Mr. Welton, and I understand, and I want to reiterate what my mom says, but and I'll speak to you individually. I'll bring you out on my farm and show you why moving us deeper is not a good idea. I understand. I mean, let's be real. The reality is some people don't want to see us. I understand that. I want to walk in your shoes. I want to be a good neighbor. But the truth is, I like working in shallow water because it's lower maintenance. I don't need cranes. I don't need all this stuff that people are scared of. I like working in the shallower water because it offers me an opportunity to move back and forth, shallow to deep, and let my gear air out and lose its fouling sometimes. And then sometimes I want fouling going into the winter for insulation. So it gives me more of a chance. So please don't move me to deeper water. It's not going to help the situation, I promise you. 6 foot of water with a 3 foot tide lowering puts us right in the way. I don't want to be in the way. I don't want to be in the way, but I don't want to be an eyesore either. I think we can work on that. Lynn Haven, so with that overall, let's go into that. Overall, those are the minutiae I wanted to answer, but overall, this entire issue and the reason we're here for, a lot of it has to do with me and one application. That application and that oyster ground was never intended to have gear of any kind on it. I offered a use plan. This is just me talking, okay, not the rest of my industry. I said I would never put gear on that lease, and I will still sign and do anything to assure you that I am not going to put gear on that lease. I will offer such a use plan. Secondly, there's changes coming, it looks like. But I can tell you it won't be on the side of aquaculture. For example, I'm actively calling, writing letters to the EPA Chesapeake Bay Advisory Panel, FDA, all kinds of people talking about pollution that boats and boaters put in the water. I got pictures the other day. I'm going to start keeping a log every time, especially I go into Broad Bay, of the trash that I pick up. Creepy crawlers from pools, entire dock boxes. You know what a creepy crawler is? Vacuum. Came out of a swimming pool, blew out of somebody's yard, a hole with legs and swing things that vacuum automatically. Must be a high-dollar item. It's nice. You don't have to clean your pool. This is real nice stuff. All up on the beach at First Landing State Park. So let's talk about, you know, oil, bilge water, exhaust, all the things that I'm required to have signs on my boat. I have to have stickers. I have to have, you know, compliance because I'm a commercial. You know, all this stuff that you don't see regular boaters taking care of. So the changes won't be just with me. Expansion of no-wake zones. You can be sure that if I'm pushed, there will be pushback, okay? Expansions of no-wake zones. I will push and use every ounce of my body and every power I have to expand those no-wake zones. How about limiting boat numbers? I mean, if it's that high density, if we've got that much density, and you're right, Saturdays, I don't work on Saturdays. You already have that built in because there's that many boaters. But the collisions, the people tangled in props, and that poor girl, all that, that wasn't oyster cages. That was poor boatsmanship, okay? On public trust, this week it's oysters. Next week it could be chickens. You've got a lot of localities looking at having chicken farming within city limits. People want to eat quality food. They want to eat local food. There's a huge food movement. People want to eat Lynn Haven oysters. They want to know where their food comes from. You know, I'm going to give a talk in Richmond in a few weeks on use of offshore and solar energy and things of that nature with a commission that's looking at, you know, energy use and how, you know, I'll be a commercial fishing representative. But one of the things I want to remind them is that a few weeks ago, a factory in Thailand with girls as young as 8 years old was discovered peeling shrimp. People don't want to eat that seafood. They want to eat our seafood. We provide that seafood. If you hamper my ability to do that, you know, then we're just back to the, you know, the imported thing. On the system, and this is what I want to close with. This system, we have a great system. Commissioner Bull, the other commissioners, routinely deny and or modify aquaculture lease and oyster ground applications. Do you know how many, in my knowledge, and I could be wrong on this, but it has been no more than one or two applications from the Lynn Haven have gone to the commission that have been protested. Now, granted, the earlier ones may not have been, people didn't know about them, I can't answer that. The ones that were protested were either denied or heavily modified. This system hasn't been given a chance to work. All I want is my fair day at the commission. If my lease goes before the commission, they will probably modify it. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But we have a system in place that works, answers a lot of these questions, that manages the public trust. And if you listen to the minutes, if you listen to the committee, the commission meeting minutes, people are routinely denied and or in whole, or their applications are modified. The commission does a good job. I trust them. I trust them with my fate. So that's what I'm hoping in August or September or whenever it is, that we give the system a chance to work before we go willy-nilly modifying it. And I apologize. That's poor word choice. I'm sorry. Y'all are doing, and I really apologize. That is before we do a lot of, as Dr. Wesson alluded to, changes that may or may not be necessary to prevent things that may or may not happen. You know, to this point, we have not, anyway, I don't want to cover that, but let's just remember we have a great system in place, and I think that if the applications come in, there's a lot of them protested coming out of the Lynn Haven. I think you're going to see the commission do the right thing. I believe that's it, and I appreciate you, your time very much. I appreciate your efforts, and I appreciate all of you allowing me the time to speak. Thank you.
Thanks. Just one comment, Chris. You know, this is a lot of stuff that was happening in Lynn Haven. It just happened to be that you were at the end of the line there where it just kind of came to a boiling point. So I think, you know, from what I was seeing, this was happening way before your application. And, you know, so a lot of this, from my vantage point of where I was seeing it, just there was a lot of people who came up and got excited about when you came, because it all was part of the overall process of people becoming more aware. So please don't take this personally. And you also have, there's good places and bad places, and some of the areas I think that you have in the Lynn Haven where you're taking your movies and stuff, I mean, they look like great places for doing this. So it's not every place is bad or every place is good either. So it's a combination of those things. Well,
and I can assure you that I know that application that I put for up in Lincoln is not a good place for cages, period. I've said that. It's never been my intention, and I agree with you. You know, I'm a good steward. I'm a responsible person, and I want to manage my money. I want to manage my investment. So, you know, does that mean that, you know, there are places maybe near, you know, I don't know. I don't want to speak for everybody. I just tell you, I had a user plan.
No, I understand. I understand. I was there at that meeting.
Yep. All right. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Question. You're looking for a lease on 25 acres that you're guaranteeing you're not going to use for oysters.
I'm sorry, on the one in Lakehorn?
Well,
what I want to do there, there are wild oysters there. I want to have a wild oyster in my lineup. But what I want to do is do it responsibly. The state right now manage their wild harvest on a third rotation. I want to do a 20% rotation. So I'm going to do 20% harvest in that area. If I take a bushel of live oysters, I want to put a bushel of shell back. I want to return, you know, I want to be a good steward. I want to return that shell, propagate the oysters there, you know, not do anything different. The oysters are there already. People are, we're talking about 100 yards or less from the yacht club, around the corner from Cavalier, that in, you know, places that in the wintertime, you know, that's where I would go to get wild oysters. I wouldn't even mess with it in the summer other than to reshell. I hope I answered your question there. Yeah, I'm not going to do aquaculture and cage or gear methodology.
I understand that.
Yes, sir. And
thank you, Chris.
Can I add one more thing? I don't already spoke, but I wanted to mention that just in the last several years, we have helped three different oyster farmers out of the business that couldn't do it. And I wanted to say that this is not easy to do, and it is not something that people are dying to get into. You know, we get up and go out on the water at 5 a.m. in 17 degrees, and we work by ourselves. There's only three of us. So, and we can't get people to work. You cannot find people to work on the water. So let me share with you that if you think people are going to rush into this, you're wrong. They're rushing out. They're coming to us and saying, can you help us get out of it?
Anybody else about want to speak tonight? Can come on forward.
Folks do it every day. I live on the water.
Excuse me, could you introduce yourself, please?
Sure, I'm Rob Federer. I work, I live in Virginia Beach in Little Neck.
Thank you.
So, anyway, for those of you that weren't here the first time, I'll go through it again. I didn't spend my entire life fortune, but I spend most of my expendable fortune to buy this house because I'm a waterfront nut and I love being on the water. So, off we go. And one day, I go out in my backyard, and there's a whole flotilla of guys just kind of walking across the way. And I ask them what they're doing, and they said they have this lease and they have the right to be there. I'd love to show you the pictures, but as these hobbyists learn how to do what these guys do well every day, as they learn, they made an absolute mess in my backyard. It scared the hell out of me. It was tough. Like, every time there was a storm, it'd kick up, you know. So it was a disaster. They were land speculators. They were opportunists. They took full advantage of the system that was available, and so they off we went. So I take an investment, you know, in a home, and now I got people in my backyard. I'm just doing stuff that looks like a junkyard back there. Now, I have to tell you, they've gotten better at it, but they've only got about 20 of them today. And I'd say if they keep it like that and they keep doing their hobby thing, you know, they want to do black-eared oysters and sell them, hey. But if they expand it to look like the other guys in Lincoln or whatever, that's going to impact my property value. And it already kind of has. And for anybody that thinks that what you've done isn't a taking or doesn't impact property values, you know, it's just not true. It is, and it did. It took a lot of property value already, and it's going to keep taking it and taking it. Now, the property owners are scared. I'm trying to keep a low profile. I'm trying to figure out whether I should sell it and run,
or stand fight, or hope that you guys do the right thing. And I really hope that you will. Because the lawyers, if the lawyers get involved, as one of the landowners that I talked to today on the way here, we talked about this. The lawyers get involved, nobody wins. You know, you ever heard you're dead right? You know, you can win, but, you know, lose the battle, but win the war. Win the battle, but lose the war. That's what's going to happen when the lawyers get involved. But make no mistake, there's some taking going on here. People move into a place. Okay, so there can be oyster leases. Well, who would have known they'd be allowed right up to your property line? Would the notification process? So let me just run through my list. I understand there's got to be some changes in notification, but I've been observing the notifications that you have, and they're not adequate. I mean, there's not even an end date. When you look at the notice, it doesn't tell you when you object. It just says, hey, look, this is going on, you know? Well, the only reason that a lease in my neighborhood hasn't already happened is because there's a moratorium on it. But I didn't even have the time to respond. I don't even know what the deadline is. Even the notifications themselves are faulty. It's just bad government. It's just not being done right. And I think to John's comment and others, in a normal situation, if you're in a residential area, and there's a field next to you that's all where everything's residential today, and the city allows somebody to put a beehive over there and grow corn over there, that's tantamount to zoning. That's a change in land use. That's a taking. You're going to affect people's land values, whether you agree, whether you sign up for that or not. I understand the industry interest. I understand it, and I empathize with you guys. But you are taking land value. So the question is the state going to pay for that? But who's going to pay to move it? Well, who put it there in the first place? The state regulation allowed it. You know, it is a taking. It is. So don't call it something else. And I think if the state, I went to Congressman Riggle's forum the other night to talk about today. The state is paying farmers to build fences so cows can't get to the water and introduce bad things into the streams. We're paying them. And then we're allowing folks to take our property to put oysters in. It's all about cleaning up the bay. That's fine. It comes at a cost. It costs my property value. I just want to be compensated. I don't really care, you know. Okay, if I made well, I'm good. But it is happening. It is a taking. And unless you do something about it, it's just going to keep happening. And you will degrade the overall. You will degrade the community if it keeps going, if you keep allowing it. You will. It's going to drag it down. There'll be posts all over, signs all over. It's going to look kind of tacky. Like Virginia Beach did like 20 years ago before it really started to become a better place, I think. So, anyway, inconsistent leasing. We've heard a couple times, you know, we don't recommend leasing in between piers. In my neighborhood, did just that. In between the piers, right in my backyard. The polls are supposed to go up to notify folks that there's a leasing action proposed, right? Well, at the same time, the city's doing various things. Like, there's various surveys. We got the Lynn Haven, Ledner Bridge going up, waterway surveys. So there's a poll here, a poll there. The fourth poll was my mooring. Well, nobody ever thought to ask. It was used in part of the survey. There was no poll put in. It was taken off that mooring. That came from the previous over passed on. Nobody said, hey, what's that, you know? Arguably, I get 50 foot around my mooring. Did I get that? No. So it's just inconsistently applied and right up to people's property, affecting ability to enjoy their property. I've heard a few things about safety, and this makes me crazy. I have an office, 150 workers. I got 120 tradesmen, and I'm a rabid safety fan. And I hate when people say, I haven't seen anybody get hurt yet. You know, the way that you deal with safety isn't by collecting up the number of people that get hurt and say, oh yeah, that's bad. That's just bad. That's like, you know, they used to do that in the old days. That's a sweatshop thing. You know, people get hurt, oh, okay, it's unsafe. You know, oh sure, you're just having a bad day. You should be more careful, you know. They have the safety industry now. You got to know, if you put structures in the water, a couple inches below the surface, you got to know that it's going to be unsafe, and you have to do a risk management plan for that. That's the way safety's done. It's day and age. It's not, well, nobody's got hurt lately.
That is not adequate safety. And I see the public servant that was here. He's a great guy, and I'm sure he's a great American, and he serves well. But he said the same thing. Well, I haven't had any incidents, you know. This is one of the, you know, that's just not how safety is done. Just educate those that don't know that. Because I happen to know a hell of a lot about it, and I live it every day. Marking. You know, the marking opens up a whole another can of worms, because what might be appropriate in one area isn't appropriate in another area. I like the idea of belief. Sometimes the signs are good. You know, there's a great resistance to permit these farms. I don't know why. I think people can come to an agreement. If you're going to have a block of 50 by 50 cages out there somewhere, you should have the plan. You should have the marking plan. You should agree where it can be and can't be. Make a decision already. Why is the waterman, why is the industry so opposed to permitting the cage farms, the structure farms? Why? I don't know, but it's going to be different. It's going to be different in somebody's, near somebody's backyard. It's going to be different out on those islands out there, those really nice barrier islands out there. It's going to be different near the channels, near the park. Why don't you agree to permit? Why is that such a big deal that everybody's got to argue and fight over? It seems like a no-brainer to me. Just my two cents. Subcontracting, you know, the land grab thing, let's get a lease, you know, once we get some value generated, somebody learns how to grow oysters, it's got a certain income, now he's going to want a sublease. I don't know how that's regulated, but I think it should be. I don't think that a leaseholder should be able to just speculate, and, you know, we talked about speculation before. I think that that ought to be addressed. I don't think that it should, ought to be able to pass down to another waterman for a lease without being vetted, just like a new lease. That's just my opinion. But I think that would deal with the speculation issue. The operations going on in my backyard does not meet the commercial regulations. John mentioned it. We talked about certain hours of the day. To be honest with you, there's so much said I couldn't understand it. But if you look in the regulations, what time is supposed to be harvesting out there, people are going in at low tide, whenever that is. It has nothing to do with refrigeration. Has nothing to do with, you know, the health department. It's easier to deal with the cages when they're at 1 foot than there are when there's 2 foot of water there, or whatever is best for the craft that they're using to get out there. So, and the stuff is not going into refrigeration. It's actually, I can show you, it's, you know, sometimes ends up on their driveway. But you know, what I'm saying is some of their commercial operators are doing it right. Now, sometimes you got these hobbyists that are going out there and just doing whatever they want and then marketing it as they see fit. It's unregulated. It's not regulated. We give people the ability to lease, and we don't even know their cages are out there. We don't know how many there are. We just say, go ahead and have a nice day and put cages out there. And they're doing stuff that isn't even, you know, from my driveway to your table, you know. I mean, that would be the tagline this weekend. I know who they are. I know their website. It's a little commercial operation. They're selling their ware, and I can tell you it's just not right. So, and I'm not going to stir that up because I'm scared. I don't want to piss them off, and I don't want to cause any trouble. But I'm just, the point I'm trying to make is it's unregulated. You have people doing it well, doing it as a business, trying to make money, and then you got these yahoos out there. Who's going to take care of the homeowner and the person who's buying the shellfish? Tell you about the stuff I've learned, and it's bad, and it's happening right in my backyard. I just want to close by saying I really appreciate all that you've been doing and struggling with it, and I do feel like the sacrificial homeowner, because I'll be honest with you, nobody really wants to say a whole lot because of the risks. Nobody wants to put their hand up and say, hey, my property is tainted. They're actually... They're hoping that you all do the right thing to protect the homeowners, the property values, the various interests that people have. So, anyway, I appreciate all you're doing. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I didn't get you out of here early, Ben. All right, one last thing. I don't see anyone else jumping up. One last thing for the commission. Karen
will not be here next meeting. She has asked if Lori can sit in for her. And so I'm asking y'all.
Yes, sure.
Well,
yes, I think so. She's an orchard scientist, and they work hand in glove, and I like her advice.
Does anybody have a problem with a representative from Lynn Haven River now being here? Hearing none, I guess you got a general approval for
Thank
that.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I don't think
Please
that's
consider that when I won't be here on the 1st of July.
Can you send a representative?
I will, if I'm allowed.
Well, and I guess, you know, that was sent to me, a question of the procedure of this, because if you have someone that's not been here, that doesn't hasn't been party of all this discussion, it can kind of backlog things, that kind of thing. And so I as part of, like, Lynn Haven now, I that's kind of a no-brainer, because they're all kind of part of this together. When Kim wasn't here, sending her boss, who she's talking for, that was kind of a no-brainer. It does become a little bit more of an issue, that kind of thing. But so I have zero problem with Lori coming, and I guess as long as the committee doesn't have a problem with that, then I'm okay. But if they do, then, you know, anyone can come. It's just whether the committee says it's okay for them to be up here. And so I'm going to operate at the will of the committee.
Okay.
So that, if I hear objections,
I'll let you know next meeting who would be my replacement.
And then I'll send it out to these guys, and if anyone objects, then we'll sit them out there. That would be the
Brock.
I think Lori would add a lot. And if I can't come and I send a representative, it would be damn cool if you sent them.
Okay. All right, well, I appreciate all the work you're doing, and I know it was a pain coming over here, and you can do it again in 2 weeks.
That's your reward.
If you keep meeting over here, I'm not sending you a Christmas card.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Don't forget your...